Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I'm Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we'll be looking at news up to the 15th of July, 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Well, our first story, Kate, asks, should UK boardrooms have tougher gender quotas? Diversity and equality in corporate boardrooms are higher in nations with stricter quotas, according to findings from City University of London Business School. In a recent study, City's Dr. Sonia Falconieri, together with Montpellier's Business School's Dr. Mawes Benary, examined boardroom compositions over 14 years in three countries with different approaches to quotas and found that the introduction of regulations was the single largest catalyst for a rise in female board presence, a rise that was significantly sharper under the mandatory regimes of France and Italy. Kate, does this research suggest that the UK needs its own mandatory quotas?
Well, the short answer is yes. If there's no adverse effect on performance, and this research suggests that actually it has a positive impact, it does make me wonder why people resist quotas. Because when you have a quota and something that is quite modest, say like 25% representation, that's still 75% ring fenced, as it were, for non-inclusive groups, if you like. So the resistance is strange. There's no strong business case. There certainly isn't a moral case. And I don't want to go back to 2 years ago. And you remember those ridiculous excuses we used to hear for the gender pay gap? You know, all the good women have gone, or there's not enough of them to go round. And it's actually people aren't trying hard enough. And if any sort of regulation helps that effort, well, then it should be welcomed.
Thank you, Kate. And I certainly do remember those excuses from years ago. Now, our next story asks, how should leaders secure home working culture for long term? Global law firm Dentons will shutter its Aberdeen and Watford offices and shift all the staff who work in those branches to permanent home working. The upbeat, forward-thinking tone of the firm's announcement chimes with new research from the Institute of Leadership and Management showing that amid all the challenges and worries associated with COVID-19, lockdown has unleashed a positive outlook and a change mentality in many organisations. Kate, looking at this research, how should leaders ensure their firms capitalise on this buoyant mood around home working to convert optimism into reality?
First step should be to really celebrate what people have achieved, whether they've switched to home working really quickly and successfully, as we hear in so many cases. People really like the flexibility of working at home. They like not having to commute. They like having that increased autonomy over their working day. Celebrate that. Celebrate when we've been innovative in changing the way we do things, whether that's pivoting or new outlets for our previous products and services, and to remember to say well done. It's so easy, isn't it, to look at what mistakes we make or where things haven't worked rather than say, do you know, this is fantastic. This can-do culture that we've created, how are we going to keep the best of that? And our research also showed, which was really interesting, that 20% of the people, and it was a big sample, well over 1,000, were actually going to be looking for a new job. And when we examined the reasons for that, most of them wanted to do something different, new role, new sector, new industry. And it did make me think whether this time of forced exclusion, if you like, from social events, certainly, maybe people have been thinking a bit more seriously about the meaning of work, because it's not been separate, has it, Rod? It's been, you know, brought into your, for some people, into their lounges and kitchens. And the boundaries have been very blurred. And you want to think, well, is this something I want to be doing for a long time? Is this giving me meaning? So there's so many positives come out of this latest period. And I think our research really has captured that optimism, which was really great to read about.
OK, thank you, Kate. Well, our next story takes this this idea perhaps a little bit further forward, and it's a story by Korn Ferry that, in a move that may start a huge trend, Fujitsu, one of Japanese largest companies, plans to reduce its office space in the country by 50% within the next 2 years by shifting roughly 80,000 employees to primarily remote work. Fujitsu's plans align with a recent report by the commercial real estate services firm Cushman & Wakefield, which says that the office will no longer be the focal point of work. Instead, the office will comprise one leg of a workplace ecosystem that will also include the home, co-working spaces, and even cafes, libraries, and public spaces. For its part, Fujitsu says employees can freely choose the place they want to work, including from home, hub, or satellite offices, depending on the type of work they can do. Kate, what is your response to this idea of a workplace ecosystem?
Well, ecosystems, as we found out last year, didn't we, Rod, with the 11th Global Peter Drucker Forum, seems to be a handy description for anything that involves more than one organisation. So it becomes an ecosystem if there are connections. And of course there are connections between home workers, office-based people, people working in coffee shops, people renting shared office space. And to start thinking about making that work rather than some of the reports we've heard where the cost-saving potential is the thing that they're latching onto. We don't need these big expensive offices. We can kit people up to work at home. Has a different morality to it and a different emphasis, because ultimately what you're doing with an ecosystem such as this, you are making trust absolutely central to how you work. You don't mind where people are working as long as they're delivering what it is required of them and they're able to collaborate, communicate with their colleagues. So I think we'll still see innovations in this space, Rod, people still finding new ways to work differently and work successfully. Because if I haven't heard from very few people have said that working at home has an adverse effect on their performance, but the exception to that, of course, is where people have not got a proper workspace where they've been unable to focus and concentrate. But where they have been able to find a dedicated workspace, the overwhelming evidence seems to be that people are really benefiting from it, as indeed are their employers.
Thank you, Kate. And just to show that these podcasts are carefully put together, our next and final story also looks at trust. This is new research from the CIPD, and it's called Workplace Technology, the Employee Experience. This representative survey of 2,414 employees highlights employee concern about the impact of workplace monitoring and surveillance. Interviews with UK workers highlighted that working from home during the lockdown has created higher levels of trust between workers and managers, with individuals feeling trusted to complete their work independently, and respondents could see how monitoring systems could negatively impact this trust. The idea of heavy workplace monitoring is strongly rejected by both workers and managers, and perceived as stress-inducing, demotivating, and dehumanising. And there is also a risk of increased monitoring and surveillance by the organisation leading to presenteeism, that is, employees continuing to work while unwell. Kate, is there a balance to be struck between trusting your staff and monitoring what they do?
We certainly have to think about what we're monitoring these people. What's the benefit of knowing how long somebody has been at their desk or on their laptop, or how long they've spent on a particular document or spreadsheet? If we are monitoring that somehow for their well-being, maybe there's an argument for that. But surely it would be better to trust people not only to manage their own workload, but to recognise that managing their well-being, to take breaks, to get up and move around, is just as important at home as it should be when people are in the office. And just really very much like the previous story, if your intentions are the best, then that is what you have to talk about. And if monitoring people, difficult as I see it, to be able to sell good intentions for that when there are so many other ways of making sure that your staff look after themselves.
Well, thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.